Hey, it's Beth. It's still 65, still hanging in there, still breathing. And this is episode 80, March 11th, 2020. Now, I was just sitting around because that's what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm not supposed to be going out. And I was trying to come up with an antidote for coronavirus anxiety, cabin fever, and blind rage. That blind rage might just be me, but I hate this. So I thought, who really had to come up with the best antidote for blind rage? And that was Scheherazade. She really had her hands full. The Arabian Nights, you know, 1,000 nights, 1,001 nights. That last night must have been hard. Anyway, she had her kingdom was going down the tubes. She was well-read. She had a father who was a diplomat. She had everything in the world. And her father, you know, being a top official, knew what was coming, and bad things were coming. So she should have had a good life, but there's always something, right? In this particular case, it was the king's wrath. He was a great guy. Everything was going great. And generous, loving king. And then he caught his beloved wife cheating on him. He lost it. He traveled like the wind on his horse to his brother's castle. These guys are loaded, right? And his older brother is out hunting, so he has to wait. He's frantic, looking for his brother's wife. Has to talk to someone that'll understand. He finds his brother's wife, unthinkably, in the arms of her male slave. I thought they lopped those things off. But anyway, this one, she was in those arms. He went berserk, absolutely crazy. And he decided that all women are horrible, unfaithful creatures. And he was going to get even. He came up with the perfect plan. The perfect plan was he'd marry a virgin every night and lop her head off every morning. And he went at it. He went at it. This was really helping him feel better. So the kingdom was in shambles. And when they got to this thousandth virgin girl, everyone in the kingdom lost it. They got so depressed because they knew nothing was ever going to fix this. He was blinded by his rage. 1,000 girls didn't make a dent in how bad he still felt about women. So Scheherazade's dad was a diplomat, lots of money, got his girls all packed up, and was taking them out before the entire generation was lost. Scheherazade looks at her dad and she says, "Dad, I'm not going. I'm going to save this kingdom myself." He's like, "Oh my God." No talking her out of it. She offered herself up to the king. She was good looking. She went right to the top of the line for it, poor dad. So, you know, night starts. She and her sister, her little baby sister, have hatched a plot. Because her baby sister's going to get it too. Scheherazade saving her baby sister and all the girls that are left in the kingdom. So the deal is, she goes and she's with the king. And when the king's ready to lop her head off, after, I don't want to talk about it, what she has to go through. That's not important. I don't know when she chose to ask for her sister. I hope it was before anything happened. But anyway, we're at the lopping the head off point, so I'm pretty sure that she gave it to him. Anyway, the sister, she says, "Please, let me just see my sister one more time." So he's like, "Oh my God, okay." Sister comes in. This is all planned. The sister says, "Scheherazade, I'm going to miss you so much. Can't you just finish that last story? Don't leave me hanging on that amazing story you were telling me." The king's like, "What story?" So Scheherazade says, "No, I have to die now." The king's like, "Wait just a minute. Let's just back up a little bit and let's hear this story." She starts telling the story and she is good at it. He's enthralled. He's under her spell immediately. This is great. Sister leaves the room, just backs out. Pew, never there. Okay, fine. Story gets going. It's a good one. And right when we get to the cliffhanger, Shahrazad tells him that the sun's coming up and it's time to lop her head off. He's like, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. She says, no, the sun's coming up. I can't tell stories when it's light out. Just kill me. He's like, wait a minute. You get one more day. One more day. So she starts telling all her best stories. 1,001 nights of this. She becomes the greatest storyteller that ever lived, naturally. Damocles sword hanging over your head. You're gonna work on it. Get it going. She perfects the cliffhanger. She starts out the next day. After that, you know, getting the one day, she comes up with her third best story, in my opinion, Sinbad and the Valley of the Diamonds. Now, Sinbad had been a sailor and, you know, poor, just another, you know, jerky sailor out there. Anyway, all over the world he goes. The ship lands at this desert island and he's walking. He's never seen anything more beautiful in his life. Perfect clear water, beautiful sand. Anyway, he walks so far and so fast that he falls into a deep sleep. I never said he was smart. So anyway, by the time he wakes up, he looks over the horizon and he can see the ship has left. He's like, oh my God. So he's stuck on this crazy, stupid island. Anyway, he walks and he's trying to find anybody there, even an animal. He finds nothing but this huge, perfectly white, pure white mound. And it's soft and he doesn't understand what it is until this amazing monster-sized eagle comes and lands on the egg and just sits there for a while, warming it up, keeping it warm. So there's nothing else on this island. Sinbad does the craziest thing. He straps, he's so tiny compared to this. It's like a Tyrannosaurus Rex size eagle. Ties his little body with a leather strap to this huge eagle's leg. And when the eagle takes off, he takes off with the eagle. Flies right off the island somewhere else. He's got no idea where he's going. Finally, the eagle takes this huge nosedive on this other island into the deepest valley you could ever imagine. Mountains on every side. And Sinbad doesn't know what to do. Anyway, he gets to the bottom and the eagle starts fighting this enormous snake. Sinbad smartly whips off the leather strap and hides. This crazy valley is filled with enormous snakes. This eagle kills the snake, grabs it, and brings it back to its lair. Sinbad looks around. He is going to get eaten. He finds a little tiny skinny cave and he hides in it. And he stays far back so that these huge snakes, their tongues are lapping around trying to find him. He's terrified. Anyway, this goes on and on. So finally, the snakes fall asleep. It's morning and he can come out. And he looks around and all of a sudden, this is unthinkable. This huge mutton sheep falls to the ground, almost hits him. He looks up, there are men there. And then he looks around. He hadn't had a chance with all the snakes. This place is covered in diamonds. Now that the sun's up, he can see they are gleaming everywhere. And this mutton has landed on some diamonds and they've been embedded in the mutton's body. That's how big these diamonds are. Just when he's trying to figure out this whole thing, an eagle comes down and takes the mutton away. He's like, oh my God. So what Sinbad gonna do? He can't get out. He can't live here another night when the snakes come out. So he's got to attach himself to this mutton's, next mutton falls down, right? These guys, oh, and half of the guys follow that eagle who has taken off with that mutton, and they are going to go to his nest and retrieve the diamonds that are in the body. It's the only way they can get to the diamonds. It's tough work, and I don't think it's going to work, but it's worth a shot. So that's what they've done. So he sees all that, and he attaches himself to the mutton with the leather strap, covered in blood. So, you know, Next mutton falls. That's what he's going to do. He does it. Boom. This eagle comes down, this Tyrannosaurus Rex size eagle, grabs by the talons the mutton, and there is Sinbad holding on. So all of these guys, this time, because the eagle, this weight is a little bit more than he can handle because Sinbad's on it and he's moving around, the eagle doesn't have a good hold and it's too heavy a load. So the men start hitting this eagle with rocks while Sinbad's attached. Anyway, Sinbad unleashes his fastener, that leather thing, again, and falls to the ground. The eagle can fly without Sinbad on. The men surround him. They're like, "What are you doing?" And he's covered in blood, and they're terrified of him. Well, he has filled his pockets when he was down there. I forgot to tell you this part. It's the most important. With a bunch of diamonds. Thank God, because he holds them out and he shows these guys. He might be covered in blood, but he's got diamonds in his hand. People get over things. Okay, so he gives them some diamonds and they give him clothes and a place to clean up. And they are going to take him and the diamonds in his pocket and the diamonds in their pocket to the richest town, Baghdad. Going to be great. They're going to have a great time. So that's what they do. Sinbad gets there and he buys up the biggest ships. He's a wealthy man for the rest of his life, but he keeps one of those diamonds in his pocket at all times to remind him of the Valley of Diamonds. That's a good one. Okay, so now Sinbad, you know, she's got that story. So, you know, she's got to start up another story. You know, the king's getting nervous. So she's like, "Oh my God, what am I going to do?" She goes, "Alibaba," you know. Puts his little gun, you know, not gun, his knife down. He's like, "What about Alibaba? You know, I got bored with that story." She's like, "Oh my God." She's got to mix it up, make it better than the Valley of the Diamonds. Come up with a better story. Alibaba, Alibaba. Okay, I like the name. She's like, "Wah." She comes up with this story. He's got a brother, terrible brother, Kasim. This guy is awful and he's selfish. The king sits back down. Okay, I have a brother. His wife was awful and selfish. Okay, I'm ready. I'm in. So she starts the story. Okay. Alibaba's dad was rich. But Kasim, after the father died, took all of the money. Alibaba's just not that bright. And Alibaba is a poor man now, looking for pieces of wood to sell. I mean, this guy is broke. His family's starving. He's got a couple of kids. They're not really proud of him, you can imagine. So anyway, that's what happens. So one day he's out there and he is looking around for some wood. These five guys on beautiful horses just thunder by him. And he looks and he follows them and he sees that they get off their horses in front of this huge rock on the side of a mountain. And the leader puts his arms together. And he can tell these guys are bad because they've got swords and they've got knives and they are thieves. They look so beautiful in their clothes. Just diamonds everywhere. These guys are thieves. So he's looking at him and he's very, very scared. But he hears that leader cross his arms, look at the big rock, and he says, "Open sesame." The big rock moves over. Shahrazad has the king riveted right now. She's like, "Oh my God, what happens next? What happens next?" So she comes up with the rest of the story. While Alibaba's waiting, they go inside. They come right back out. All their bags, they went in with a bunch of leather bags filled with things. He doesn't know what it is. They come back out. All the bags are gone. They get back on their horses. The leader stands there, crosses his arms, and he says, "Open sesame." And the door closes. I mean, he should say close sesame, but this is not my story. So anyway, door closes. They go off. When Alibaba is positive they are gone, he goes and stands in front of this huge rock, crosses his arms, and says, "Open sesame." The thing opens up. To his great surprise, he goes in, and it is filled with everything. Gold, silver, rupees, diamonds. Beautiful, beautiful, everything you could imagine. Clothes, just what all the wealthy people were wearing is right here in this cave. He can't believe it. So there's money everywhere too. He's not that stupid. He knows he can't take everything. He just takes money, little bits everywhere. You can't even tell, just so you can't even tell he took it. Goes outside, crosses his arms, says, "Open sesame," and it closes. I heard this story when I was a kid. I mean, I think Shahrazad nailed it because you can see this one really stuck with me. So I think the king's really happy now listening to this story. And Ali Baba's pockets are full. He goes racing home to his wife, his poor little wife. She's like, "Oh my God, what did you do? Steal? What happened to you? We're going to get killed." Ali Baba goes, No. I didn't steal it. It was stolen already." I think he'd fit right in, you know, in America right now. That's how we do things. So anyway, she's like, "Oh, okay, great. You didn't steal it." So what happens next is he says, "We need to know how much all this weighs. I'm going to go to Kasim's house and I'm going to ask his wife for the scale. I just want to know how much this weighs. I don't want to be fooled when I try to sell this gorgeous gold that I've got." She's like, "Okay, you know, she's not my type. You go by yourself." So he goes over, and Kasim's wife is as smart as a whip. And she smells a rat right away. Like, sure, what would you need that for, right? So what happens next is Kasim takes it home, and she put a little bit of wax on the bottom. And because he was going to weigh wood, which is so dumb. I mean, he couldn't come up with a better story. When he brings it back, the wax has been dipped down. She can see that it was probably gold or something of value. And so she tells her husband. And Kasim goes, "Oh my God, you know, I'll get it out of him. Don't worry." Kasim goes over to Ali Baba's house, and Ali Baba goes, "Hello." And he goes, "Yes, I'm just happy to see you, my brother. I want to help you. I've always wanted to help you." He's like, "Really? Thanks." He's such a... Ali Baba's not the smartest. I told you that already. So in moments, Kasim has the whole story out of him. You know, open sesame, all the gold, everything. Well, the next morning, Kasim goes with 4 mules. And he does open sesame. It opens up, and he has all those mules with every single thing that's in this cave. And Ali Baba told him not to even think about it. He said, "Look, I just took a couple of coins." And Kasim said, "Believe me, I'm not even going to go down there. Don't worry about it." Well, of course he does, and of course he's ruining everything. And anyway, he's so excited, just like, oh, loving all this money, just throwing it up in the air, kissing it, that he actually forgets the open sesame. He forgets how to say it. And it should be, you know, whatever. And he's stuck there. The thieves come back. This is when, exactly when Shahrazad said to her, "This king, time to go to bed." So he's like, "Okay, but I'll be back tomorrow. You get another day." Okay, so the thieves come back and kill him right away. I mean, why not? It's obvious what he's doing. So Ali Baba's, you know, wife comes over and says, "Look, I got to tell you the truth. This is what he was doing, and he didn't come back." Ali Baba goes to the cave, finds his brother and the mules inside, dead. So bring the body back on a mule to the family. Well, they have this amazing housekeeper named Morgana. Morgana's watching all this, and she goes, "You know what? Those thieves are going to figure this out. We've got to act like Kasim was sick." And even Kasim's wife's like, "Oh, that's a pretty good idea. Okay." So they go, and she goes to the doctor, and she says, "My husband's sick, and he needs some medicine." So we got a track. We know we've got a little trail here. And he's going to die. He's going to die. So, you know, he does, and they all think it was from sickness. Nobody looks at the, you know, all the little holes in his body. They wrap him up. And he's gone. Alibaba's, the thieves come to town and they want to know who did this, who knows their secret. Even though everything is still there, somebody knows the secret. So they go to the doctor and they said, you know, the body's gone. the body's gone in the cave. They're like, that's how they know that this has happened. I'm not as good as Scheherazade, but you know, you got to bear with me. Okay. That detail, right? So, doctor says, yeah, Kasim died just the other day, just yesterday. So where does he live? Well, you know, his house is empty. His wife actually died the very same day from a heart attack. So nobody's living in that house anymore, but he's got a brother. Where's the brother live? Okay, so that happens. And the leader of the gang puts a little like blood on the door so they can find it later. You know, I've heard that story before too. So have you. So anyway, you know, detail right there. Okay. Could have cleaned it up with something else, but she's frantic. Scheherazade's got to be tired by now. Anyway, that's the detail. So Morgana puts blood on all the doors. So when the thieves come back, they can't figure out which house it is. She's smart, right? Then the leader comes back with another plan. She foils it. And when she foils this one, she kills him. So it's like, Morgana, you're amazing. So everybody loves her. She becomes part of the family. And anytime they want any more stuff, they can just go open sesame and nobody else knows anything about it. What I like about this story is that Scheherazade made the maid really smart. I mean, only a woman would do that. That is really nice. Way back in the day, people might wonder if their maids aren't really smart. It's a good story. So you got to thank her for that one. So anyway, that story is that story. Now, the other thing about Scheherazade is she came up with the magic carpet. She used it a lot in all of her stories. Probably when the guy was getting bored, she'd just whip out the magic carpet, because you can get above people and look at them. You can fly all around the world. It's just a great little prop. So she used it all the time. And one of her stories was that there was a king, and he had the biggest carpet that ever was. 40,000 men could be on the carpet, of soldiers. So they could swoop in to any town right in the center of it and take anything they wanted. This guy was super proud. One day there was a little crease on the carpet, and he flattened it out. But when he did that, the carpet leaned over and all 40,000 of the men fell off the carpet. Pride goeth before the fall. I think that's where that came from. So she also came up with a story for the magic lamp and rubbing it and genies and everything. I mean, this girl was amazing. And these stories, she did it. She was prolific. She was terrified and prolific. And her stories have been retold and enhanced by almost every culture in the world, especially the magic carpet. I mean, it became the Queen of Sheba gave one to King Solomon, and he didn't really appreciate it, and then she got mad. So that's a good story. Then, you know, it's Slavic folk tales, and there's a Russian who had this magic carpet. And then Mark Twain even had the magic carpet in his story about Captain Stonefield and how he went to heaven. And J.K. Rowling, Harry Potter, magic carpets were banned by the wizards. I mean, Scheherazade is my superhero. Here's a line for Scheherazade. If you can keep your head while all about you are losing theirs. Wait a minute. That's for another time. That's Rudyard Kipling. It's a most famous poem, but he is the best storyteller compared to Scheherazade. He's the other one. And we're going to go there. And he's an incredible antidote for all of our problems, all of our worries. He'll take your mind off of it. And that'll be my next story. We're going somewhere. We're going big time with Rudyard Kipling. So I'm going to sign off. Anyway, I just hope, you know, it helped me. What can I say? You know, I'm the only one here. So I hope you liked Scheherazade. I do. And I love that she was a woman and a great storyteller. She would have won Oscar after Oscar for all of these stories. So anyway, take care and just keep it cool.